Good evening, everybody. I think I'm trying to figure out whether I should... Should I stand or should I sit? What do you reckon? All right, I'm sitting. I crowdsourced that decision. All right, so since I came to Australia 8 years ago, basically what I've been doing, and it's sort of been the thing that I've done in Australia, is studying what happens once everyone gets connected together. So 8 years ago, I asked myself, what happens when we're all connected? And 8 years ago, we weren't. So this week, more or less, 7 billionth person born on planet Earth, 6 billionth mobile phone subscriber, more or less. And so we're now getting to this point where being human and being connected, they're synonymous, and they're going to be continuously synonymous, because as soon as a baby pops out of the womb, instead of sticking the tag on them, well, that tag is going to be a mobile phone. So that you can check their heart rate and their breathing and their temperature. And it's going to be that way until we shove off this mortal coil, and there will probably be a cell phone placed in the crypt just in case we want to call somebody. Now, I've taken all of the ideas that I've been working on for the last 8 years, and they're now slowly going into a book called The Next Billion Seconds. It's called The Next Billion Seconds because the billion seconds between 1995 and 2026, it's a little over 30 years, are basically going to be as important to the human race as the birth of language 70,000 years ago. Because we are all now directly connected to everyone else. And because of that, all of the flows of information and knowledge and power everywhere, and particularly in business, are all starting to change. Now, this all started out for me because the Screen Producers Association of Australia, who are basically the union for the producers, asked me to give them a little talk about where things would be going with film and television distribution. And this was just the time that iTunes was coming out, the iPod had just been introduced, and there was this little thing on the horizon known as BitTorrent that no one was using yet. But I soon discovered when I started to look at this, that this thing that we used to call the audience, and the people that we used to call the audience, were no longer the audience. In fact, they'd become the marketers, they'd become the advertisers, and they'd become the distributors all rolled into one. Because you could see the people were doing that. They were doing that with music, they were doing that with movies, they're doing that with television shows. And of course, they do that more in Australia than any other nation in the world, because we sit at the end of a very long and capricious distribution chain. And so as soon as it became possible for people to get a movie that wouldn't be shown in a theater because Village Roadshow decided it was going to be shown 6 months from now, or get a television show immediately because Channel 9 decided it would be shown 3 months from now, the consumers immediately went for it because they had the tools and they were empowered enough to do that. And it spread like wildfire because people spread the word. And they spread the word not just to the people that they were closest and dearest to. That's the difference. Because we are now all directly connected, because the mobile subscription rate in Australia in 2011 is 120%. I know, it's above 120%. That was the last time we measured it. Because smartphone ownership rates are now the highest level in the world, greater than 50%. Because of that, every single one of us has all of the kit that we need to get in touch with, to reach, to contact, to convince, to advocate to someone else. And you don't actually need to know someone's number or someone's email address or someone's LinkedIn page to be able to do this. You don't have to be introduced by a mutual friend anymore. All you need to participate in this is to be interested in something. Because the first thing that I started to see from my own research was, now that we're all connected together, we can form instantaneous connections with others. Now, there's a problem there, because as soon as you can become connected to everyone else, you immediately get flooded with those connections. Spam. All right? Spam is the price we pay for being in a world where everyone is really well connected. And so we really do enjoy being connected, but we're constantly fighting a battle against spam. The way that we do it is by making a decision about the things that we choose to connect about, which we do all the time simply by deciding what we're interested in and connecting to people on the basis of those interests. And so everyone at this table has interests. They have interests in the real world, they have interests online, and they're connected with people who reflect those interests. And those interests represent a network. It's a hidden network inside the network. And that's the important network. It's that sharing network. Because as people share what they know, we're all participating in these highly specific networks. And they're feeding on our interests. They feed our interests. They're feeding on our hobbies, and they feed our hobbies. They're feeding on our passions, and they feed our passions and our fantasies. And we can now do this better and faster and more efficiently than we've ever been able to do it in human history. And it's precisely because all of these connections are two-way, because they're back and forth, because it's not being distributed from a single point. So you're not actually out there listening for the latest news for something that you're interested in, because if you're interested in it, the news now comes and finds you, because someone will pass it along. Generally, if it's really interesting, several people will be passing it along. And that's because of these sharing networks. And so you're plugged in. We're all plugged in, and we're plugged in if it's important, if it means enough, if it matters. And that's the key thing. Does it matter? That's the point in which all of this pivots. Because what's happened in the last half billion seconds, since 1995, all of the friction that surrounds human communication has been smoothed away. There's no friction to any communication anymore. And so that made everything that was slow and local and maybe even a little bit dull, all of that has vanished, and it's now all fast, and it's now all global. And it's as interesting as we choose to make it by how much we want to invest ourselves in it. So there are no barriers anymore. And of course, that's good and bad, because everyone can now directly touch everyone else. It's amazing, but it's very spammy. It's very noisy. 6 billion people can now directly reach every single one of us. And so each of us are now faced with a choice as an individual in this culture. How much of this will I need to ignore? It's not how much can I take in. It's now how much will I need to ignore. So we've gone from a condition of media absence to media abundance. And so now it's about how do you regulate that abundance. And so we're in this point now between two cultures. We're transitioning from what was a very regular, a very controlled, and a very knowable set of channels by which we came to know about the world. And now we're entering a world where everyone markets everything that interests them to everyone else who shares that interest. And so we're descending, and I'm using that word deliberately, we are descending into a world without controls. It's a world that's basically unknowable because there's too many people now pulling in too many ways. I'll quote my favorite philosopher, the Greek philosopher Heraclitus, who said, "The way down is the way up." And it sounds like this descent into chaos might be the end of marketing. It is not the end of marketing. A decade ago, the Clue Train Manifesto, which I assume you've probably all read, the central statement: markets are conversations. Really don't actually even need to add anything. Those three words sum it all up. That's the lifeline. That's the one thing that we can always remember in the midst of all of this chaos, because from that one bit of knowledge, it is possible to build marketing in the 21st century. So let's try to put that idea into practice. Let's be practical about it. I only really have one takeaway for you from what I have to say. It's a single word. I will go through it in detail, but it's a single word. That single word is listen. It's the rule. Now, as we all got taught by our mothers, you have two ears and one mouth, and therefore, you should listen twice as much as you talk. Until recently, there was no meaningful way to listen except in these very sort of tightly controlled laboratory conditions, which in fact are as problematic as anything because they tend to actually reflect your own assumptions going in. But now that everyone is sharing everything all the time through every possible public channel, it is possible to listen. And it's not just possible to listen, it's possible to listen in real time to what everyone is saying about every one of your brands. And it's possible, actually, to get more segmented than that. It's possible to listen to what 30-year-old mothers in Western Sydney are saying right now about your brand. And so that means that the world has now become a focus group that is always open, always available, always there. If you listen. And if you listen close enough, you can actually feed that back interactively into a marketing campaign. I have seen technology that allows people to watch the Twitter reaction to a television commercial as it is being aired. So the audience may no longer exist, but in its place, there are now 6 billion conversations. And some of those are going to be about your brand. And so that's a very important reason to listen. But beyond that wealth of information that your customers are freely providing in this conversation, and more important than that, you actually have to listen because you have to listen for the threatening rumble of problems. When someone has a moment, whether it's bad service or a bad mood or a bad product, whatever it is, that moment is shared. That moment has always been shared. It's the way we get through those moments as human beings. But of course, now those moments are shared across an amplifier that, because it no longer has friction, reaches everyone instantaneously. And so, I have a friend who's a businesswoman who was traveling and in the middle of her travels found out that her credit card limit had been cut in half only because she was trying to use it to pay for her hotel room. And because this happened after business hours, she couldn't call the credit card provider and check in on it. And so she had a very public meltdown all over Twitter with a few thousand other customers of that bank. Or last year, when an engine dropped off a Qantas A380. And there was a 25-minute period between when Twitter knew all about this and Qantas said anything about this, and Twitter went bananas, went nonlinear. And these things happen because the brands aren't listening. You can contrast this. So this is my brandy new iPhone 4S. Yes, yes, envy me. I got it from Telstra last week. It took some time for the new SIM that came with the phone to be activated. And after a while, I was like, well, this isn't working. I know what I'll do. I'll go out and ask the Telstra channel on Twitter, at Telstra, what's going on here? And because there was that relief valve in place, even though they didn't quite solve my problem, I had to call to get the problem solved. But because there was the relief valve in place for me, I didn't have a full-on nuclear meltdown on Twitter. Oh, my God. It's just important to be engaged in listening. If you do that, you get rid of about 98% of all of the potential nuclear events. But listening is not just a job. It's not, oh, you're a listener. It's your job. All right. Particularly if you're a large organization, that person explodes because there's too much listening that needs to be done. Listening needs to become an effective and deep part of business DNA. A social business is at its core a business that listens. And so listening isn't passive. You know, where you listen and when you listen when that happens, there are demands being placed upon you because you're listening. You don't just listen and have it roll off of you. You listen because you're planning on doing something with what you're listening. And so the social business is listening in three different dimensions. It's listening to itself, and that listening happens across silos, it happens across hierarchies, it happens across departments, it just happens. And it listens to its customers. And then it's also listening to its customers talking to other customers. That's the three-ring circus, and you have to be doing all of that listening. The smartest businesses learn how to listen well. They learn how to make listening part of their business DNA, because what they've learned is that listening is not something that you endure. Listening is a gold mine where your customers are constantly giving you amazing ideas about how to improve your products and services. And that if you are well tuned in and flexible enough to be able to respond to that listening, they become the engine that powers the 21st century business. And it doesn't cost anything to listen except time and attention and a complete redesign of all of your business practices. Not much at all. Okay. So it costs nothing and it costs everything. But the tools are here. The tools are the solved problem. Because we can capture so much. We can use big analysis tools. We can just sort through it. And so if you're looking at this going, wait a minute, there's no way I can actually contemplate getting in front of this much listening, I want to quote Clay Shirky. He says, there's no such thing as information overload. There's only filter failure. And so bear in mind that you can always filter, but bear in mind that filtering has a cost, because whenever you filter, you also create a blind spot around the things that you're filtering. So you will need to filter, but every once in a while, you're also going to need to peek over the fence at the chaos on the other side to see what the filter is leaving behind. So I want to close with a little story from my own life. I got robbed last month, and my wallet was stolen. And so for a week's time, I had no key card and I had no credit card. So while the bank was getting my key card and credit card back, I had to go in and visit local branches quite a bit, which is something that we never do anymore because we've got key cards and credit cards. And the first time I go in and I fill out a check and we have a pleasant conversation about the theft that had just happened, and the teller looks and says, oh, I see you've got some money there. You know, we can get you a better interest rate. It's like, no, thank you. I understand. That's the account I use for my taxes. Don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Don't think anything about it. 2 days later, I'm running out of money. I don't remember what we did before ATM cards because I needed money all of the time. It was weird. I go into another branch of the bank, go to the counter, fill out another check, get my money. You know, I see that you have some money in this account. And I was like, thank you very much. I understand the offer. I don't need the offer, but thank you. Don't think anything about it again. 2 days later, again, I'm out of money. I cannot believe this money thing. I go into the same branch that I was in 2 days before, go to the counter. Can you guess what happens? At this point, I do have a small meltdown, because I'm just getting sick of not having money. And I'm also getting sick of being asked the same question. And I say, please make a note on my account that I'm not to be asked this question again, because I already have been asked this question several times. Now, I could have gone nuclear and at that moment sent out a tweet to 24,000 people explaining how I was really upset with my bank for just not remembering anything that it's doing. Instead, I actually went to my buddy who heads up online customer service for the bank. Very convenient, that. And I explained the problem to him over Twitter, and he apologized immediately, adding that, in fact, the bank had the best CRM system in the industry. He paused for a second and said, if they'd only use it. And the thing that occurred to me was that the bank wasn't listening to itself. It wasn't listening to what it was saying to me. And so that every time I came into the bank, it was as if it was a tabula rasa. It was like memento, right? The same thing would happen over and over again. And the bank hadn't started to think about the institutional processes required to listen to itself, which were then necessary so that it could listen to me and then fix things. Now, I think that things will improve. I know him. He's got an ear at the people at the C level. So that kind of story is the kind of story that bubbles up. And maybe that bank will then start to change its direction around what it remembers. And maybe then it will start to listen. Listening takes time. Listening is slow. When I came to Australia, I was brought over to the Australian Film, Television, and Radio School to basically bring them in to the digital age, to the age of interactive media. So I went and I talked to all of the directors of all the departments, and I had a flash, and I realized that if we did one simple thing, it would change the entire production process. Rather than turning out 35mm films, they would do that and have to deliver a DVD. And the entire production process would have to change to reflect the fact that they were putting out a digital product. So I want you to think, when you go back to your organizations, if we say, okay, we've got to do everything else and we have to listen, which is not the normal mode for marketers. Marketers are used to talking. How does that affect every process through the organization all the way to the beginning? Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. I will follow your crowdsourcing lead and stay seated. Can I suggest that everyone start eating? And I'll just say a few